This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On the ABC Listen app.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you. In your town, your suburb.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt.
Can we get people who have lost their homes from fire back onto their property faster and with better temporary homes? For decades now in this state, we have witnessed or possibly even lived through temporary fire accommodation. We've seen everything from shipping containers converted to basic homes that were sent in after Black Saturday, caravans, tents. But how temporary is temporary? Long after we stop talking about the fires, when they fall off the front pages of our newspapers, people are still living in caravans. They're still cooking on gas stoves outside in the middle of winter, freezing through nights, sometimes for years. So have the solutions got any better? This was Jane, who is a farmer from Ruffey, and she spoke with Limo on our breakfast program this morning.
The quicker we can get fast-track planning, and I know that if the Commonwealth and state could do a massive contract with some good prefab, we have a prefab house that arrived, a pre-built house, in a day. And so for those people who have lost their houses, to know that there's hope of a rebuild and quickly being back on their land.
So is prefab the solution? And how important is it to get people back onto their land quickly but in secure housing? How temporary is temporary? In just a moment, we'll speak with a man who is still living in his caravan in Mallacoota 5 years on.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So how temporary is temporary when fires rip through and destroy small communities? Quite often we look at temporary solutions. They can be caravans, they can be tents, shipping containers. We saw hundreds of shipping containers that were brought in for Black Saturday. However, people ended up living in them for years. And do we forget about it? Do we move on? Do we not think about it anymore, possibly in Melbourne, in areas not impacted? However, those who are living in the so-called temporary accommodation are doing that for year on year, cooking outside and freezing through winters. So is something like prefab a proper solution? Justin Brady lost his home in Mallacoota during the Black Summer fires. And Justin is still living in his caravan. Many of you may actually know Justin. He is one of the members of Things of Stone and Wood, a musician who on that day managed to save many of his instruments. But Justin, unfortunately, you lost your home. Thank you for joining us on The Conversation Hour. And I know this is a tricky thing to talk about as there are still advice messages for the Mallacoota area. So it must be an emotional and stressful time for locals. But the idea that you're still living in your so-called temporary accommodation, have people kind of forgotten about how long you can be in this type of housing for, do you believe?
I think some people have. Like, I'm actually in a housing pod that Bushfire Recovery, which is now Emergency Recovery, have supplied me, and that's been a lifesaver for me. I've had a few delays. Like, I had a builder turn up and lead me up the garden path for a year and then disappear. And that set me back quite a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm lucky enough to, you know, if I didn't have that pod to live in, that'd be really hard work. Like, people ask me how you're doing, and really it's all relative. Like, I think of people on the other side of the world have been shot at just lining up for food and water. So
yeah.
I feel pretty lucky in some ways.
Can you describe, there have been images of your temporary accommodation in Mallacoota on ABC news pages. I know our Gippsland team have been out and spoken with you. Can you just describe to us your current living arrangements and what your setup is?
Well, I've got a pod that got delivered, and my block's a tricky block because it's steep. So it was put down the bottom of the block because there was already a cleared space there. I had a caravan that was burnt to the ground. But I've been trying to survive off online teaching, but I don't get signal down in the pod. So I do have a little caravan I teach from, and I have an outdoor cooking area. And that's been really good for me, and for a lot of reasons. It means after the fires, I was not in a good way, and to have friends to come around and visit me in a nice outdoor space, and I've sort of rigged up a little bit of an outdoor kitchen, that's actually been great for my mental health, to have people come around and sit in that rather than come down to the pod, which is a little bit awkward for people who are not great at getting down steep hills, you know.
Absolutely. Justin Brady is with you. He lost his home in Mallacoota during the Black Summer fires. He's still living in so-called temporary accommodation. And there was a call this morning from Jane in Ruffy, a farmer in Ruffy, who believes that prefab is the solution. I mean, there's a text here, Justin, that says, I lived in a town in Scotland during the war, which was heavily bombed. Very quickly, the authorities erected estates of very practical and comfortable prefab homes, which people loved, and they were actually quite reluctant to leave years later. That's from Eleanor. When you look around Mallacoota at the moment, how many people are still in caravans? How many people are still in these pods?
I couldn't be accurate on that. But
is it just a handful or more?
Yeah, well, it'd be at least a handful. I think people forget that after the fires, COVID happened, and COVID just slowed the whole process down, and it's just very difficult to get people to travel long distances because people couldn't because of the whole COVID restrictions. And
then there was nowhere for builders to live either at the time to rebuild the homes.
And the other issue is that some of the prefab houses, they're great, but they're not built to a flame zone. And it's been a really tricky thing. So bushfire recovery, or now emergency recovery, I've had a case manager to guide me through this whole process because I just couldn't think straight after the fires. I was a bit of a mess. And I think they've done an incredible job. And it's been quite challenging given the COVID thing and the remoteness of Mallacoota. So,
it's been a long process, isn't it?
And it's 5 years. It is can be a bit frustrating, but I've just had to learn to be patient and roll with the punches, so to speak, and just try and make the best of the situation I've got.
Justin, thank you for just spending a little bit of time with us. And I know it would be an emotional time at the moment too for those in Mallacoota, given what you guys went through 5 years ago. This is when trauma and memories can bubble to the surface. But it's important for us to know that when we talk about temporary accommodation, that for many, that can mean years and years and years. So as we learn as Victorians, you know, as we live side by side, unfortunately, with bushfires, can we do temporary better? Justin, thank you so much for your time. Take care. Justin Brady, who lost his home in Mallacoota after the fires. You may know him. He is one of the musos from Things of Stone and Wood. He's a musician. He managed to save his instruments. But we heard this morning from a farmer in Ruffy who's calling for prefab as a solution. So is it a good solution? This, how temporary is temporary? Well, how long is a piece of string, says this text. How long does it take to rebuild? Baby steps are good. Live in a caravan and build a big shed. Make it livable and then rebuild your house. That's from Alan. Damien Crowe is the director of Prefab Australia. Damien, how quick and easy is a prefab solution? Is Jane, the farmer from Ruffy, right? Like, do you just have a stockpile of prefab houses that can be shipped to people in bushfire affected areas and give them a home with dignity to live in on their land? Or is it trickier than that?
Hi, and thanks for having me on the show again. Look, it is a bit challenging. We do have, you know, some of our members like Fleetwood and Ozco and ATCO, those sort of companies that have a higher fleet of buildings and have, you know, accommodation solutions. So they're immediate solutions that are ready to go, which can house people temporarily. But, you know, they're very small rooms, typically used for, you know, accommodation on a mining site or a construction site and that type of thing. So it's only always very temporary. But, you know, we have worked with the Resilient Building Council, and we've worked with them and Melbourne University and one of our members called Rendine Construction, and we looked at taking old Victorian school buildings, old classrooms, and turning them into disaster relief accommodation. We've actually designed it and built it and had it on display. So we do have solutions, but also our members typically can produce a home from start to finish, handing over keys in about 16 weeks. So the process of rebuilding can be very quick using prefab, but, you know, you also need to think about codes and standards and planning, and they play a big factor in these rebuilds.
So you've previously worked in converting old school classrooms into emergency accommodation. How simple is that process, and how much of a solution is that? And we know when we're coming into fire season, we know, the authorities know. So, I mean, have you ever got a call from the state government saying, hey, just in case we need them, do you have any homes that we could use if need be?
We haven't had that call yet, but we certainly have been working with the government on this. As I said, we developed a prototype and we have, you know, showcased that as a working solution. And that was looking at these classrooms that have been in use for 40 years and they're very strong structurally. And we thought, well, why would we throw these away? Why not repurpose them? And so that was the idea behind the project, which was supported by the Victorian government. And we think there's a real opportunity there to have a fleet of, you know, these small homes that can be deployed when there is a natural disaster. So that is something we're currently working through. It's only early stages, but we've developed it. We've delivered it, we've showcased it, and it is sitting there ready to go. And we have a sophisticated supply chain of Victorian prefab manufacturers who could participate in a program of building and storing these. We've got companies like J&B Modular and Shepparton who are producing prefab homes and have also already made a call out to the Victorian government saying they'd be happy to assist and help store some of these homes for when there is a natural disaster like this.
Well, we're going to have a chat with Michael Fotheringham in just a moment. He's the Managing Director for the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute, who one of the things that he quite possibly will talk about is not confusing housing solution with emergency housing. And prefab homes are a part of the housing solution. So once they're in there, does it then make them no longer temporary? Does it make them more permanent, Damien? This is my final question.
Yeah, so you have two solutions here, really. I mean, you've got that temporary solution, which is an accommodation solution, which can be bought in very quickly, set up for people to live in, and then taken away. But then you also have the majority of the prefab supply chain in Australia who build national code compliant Australian standards homes that meet all the relevant building codes. So we are talking about permanent homes. We are talking about homes that are designed with a 50-year plus design life as a traditional home is designed. So the only difference is that we can go from design to handing over a set of keys in 16 weeks typically. So these are permanent homes, high-quality homes, but they're just built really fast.
Damien, good to get your thoughts on whether or not this is actually a solution. Thank you. Damien Crowe, the Director of Prefab Australia. The caravan is the ultimate prefab. Once finished, then just drive away. And another saying, a caravan is prefab. They're everywhere and they're cheap. I guess the question is, how long do you live in it? Also coming up this hour, we're going to touch base back with Matt Fowles. If you join me on Saturday as a part of our rolling coverage team, Matt Fowles is the owner of Fowles Wine. He lost his vineyard, he lost his home after trying so hard to keep and to protect them. He went back home, caught up with his family and was heading back to reassess his property and day by day to look at what that next stages are for him and for his family. We'll touch base with Matt Fowles in just a moment as well. But is prefab a solution to temporary housing accommodation in our fire-affected areas? What do you think?
ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Earlier this morning, we heard from a farmer in Ruffey who was talking about whether or not prefab was the solution for fire-affected areas. And if you think back over the decades where towns and communities have been devastated by fires, caravans are a solution, shipping containers are a solution, but for how long? And what do we need to change to get people back onto their properties when it's safe to do so a little faster? Michael Fotheringham is the Managing Director of the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. Michael, when we get something like prefab onto a property, like we just heard from Damien, It sounds like a good and quick solution, but it's no longer temporary. It sounds quite permanent. I mean, what are your thoughts on housing people safely back on their land after a fire has been through their town?
Well, I think the key thing is we need to be looking for long-term solutions, not temporary solutions. And this is the real challenge. Prefab housing can absolutely be a long-term solution. What we've got to be careful about is those short-term solutions that end up being used as long-term. So, you know, we heard from Justin and you know, he's still living in a pod from the Black Saturday fires, you know, a number of years ago now. And that was never intended as a permanent solution, but because of the nature of the steep block he's on and challenges with rebuilding over the last 5 or 6 years, he's still caught up in that. So, you know, we've got to be careful about not doing a temporary band-aid solution that ends up being treated as semi-permanent and looking for something that's going to last longer. Now, prefab plays a really important role. It can be built faster. It can be delivered if the blocks are suitable for those, you know, if the site's suitable, if it's not too steep, a range of other challenges around the actual blocks. So it has a role to play.
Lots of people saying there's sort of two sides here quite strong. Lots of people saying it's easy, a caravan. And then lots of texts from people who have lived through this and saying, yeah, they're freezing in winter, they're boiling hot in summer. It impacts your mental health living in a tiny, tiny space, being exposed to weather, both hot and cold. You shouldn't have to live through this for any long period of time. Is there a true understanding of what it's like, especially once the fires fall out of the headlines, that people are still living in caravans, are still living in this temporary accommodation, and the impact that could have on not just them, Michael, but on the entire town and community?
Absolutely. Look, I think it is underappreciated. It's something that we've been looking at over the last couple of years, and we're really concerned that these temporary solutions take the pressure off and mean that these issues get forgotten and people's lives are just sort of left to sort of find their own way without that support continuing. So, you know, we need to be careful not to just say, here's a quick solution, that'll patch it over for now and someone else can worry about it later. You know, we need to actually think long term.
Are there plans, I don't know if you know the answer to this, Michael, but I mean, does the state, does the federal government, are there good plans in place for temporary housing? We know when we're coming into fire season, we know that unfortunately there is a very good chance of people losing their homes and lots of people in one area losing their homes. Are there good plans in place for emergency accommodation?
It's a real challenge. I mean, the Federal Emergency Management Agency and Emergency Recovery Victoria are both focused on that immediate recovery rather than the long-term solutions. So, you know, by nature of their agencies, that's what they're there to do. So, you know, we have a broader housing system challenge where we don't have enough housing supply. We've heard plenty about that in the last couple of years. So we don't have stockpiles of prefab houses that are ready to go, that are just being held offline just in case, because, you know, there's demand for that already out there. What we do have is an industry that's ready to respond rapidly. So, you know, as your earlier caller suggested this morning, you know, having governments intervene and say, look, let's get a big program of building going in the prefab space dedicated to these areas that are affected, is one way that we can, you know, accelerate the process.
Michael, in just a moment, and this is a question without notice, there was a woman who our station reporter, Kate Mead, spoke to this morning in Kyneton, and she was worried that she and others would fall through the cracks when it comes to housing. She lost her home. However, she's a renter. And when we talk about homeowners and we talk about insurance and all of the things and rebuilding for the homeowner. However, especially in some of these fringe areas in the outer parts of Melbourne, people have moved there because they couldn't get a rental in Melbourne. And we probably have a relatively decent number of renters who have been impacted by this. Do they fall through the cracks, do you think?
Yes, they do. And this is a really unfortunate truth. Around a third of Australian households are renters. But when we're looking at disaster recovery, about, you know, trying to rebuild after natural disasters, whether they be fires or floods, we do tend to focus on the property owners, whether they're owner-occupiers or investors. And rebuilding that property is the focus. But, you know, there are households who are in those properties who didn't own them but were renting, who do tend to be the sort of the last in the queue. And you know, often even those renters whose homes weren't affected by the incident but are in the area end up being displaced because the owners of that property move back into the rental property and tip them out because their own property was affected. So, you know, there are a range of cascading effects on renters who are the least empowered in this setting.
Yeah, well, we'll continue that conversation in about 15 minutes' time. Michael, always good to speak with you. Happy New Year.
Thank you, Rochelle. You too.
See you. Michael Fotheringham, the Managing Director for the Australian Housing and Urban Research Institute. This text from someone who lives in Carn River, and it says, I wish people would get to the real heart of this issue. People who are in temporary housing after the fires do so because they didn't have home insurance. They don't have housing insurance because the cost of insurance is too great in fire zone areas. Simple. Fix the insurance cost in the fire zone areas for lower income families. So that's a part of this conversation as well. Let's have a chat to Jane, who I believe was the woman who started this conversation in the first place and has been listening to this, Jane, and you've given us a buzz. Jane, you really piqued my interest today when you were saying, let's go for prefab. What's prompted you to call in again?
So the last caller was spot on. We need interest, no interest loans. But I just wanted to reinforce our prefab home is 7-star. We're warm, we're cool. It's a fantastic solution. I agree with Michael Fotherington that we do need to be able to provide a quick solution that is actually has long-term home, a long-term home for those residents that have lost their houses.
Insurance is a really big part of this, isn't it? And we hear the term, unfortunately, you know, self-insured now, which basically means I hope I have enough money in the bank to cover myself if something goes wrong. And the more we see devastating fires like this, the more insurance will go up and that this cycle will continue. Jane, thank you so much for calling back through. How's everything at the moment? How's your community? Who have you spoken to?
I've spoken to a number of people, people that, whose houses have been luckily saved and then those that have lost their houses. Of course, our heart goes out to those that have lost their houses and the devastation to animals. So our neighbours buried 445 sheep yesterday. We had a guy delivering us hay. He just had put down two horses and sheep. So incredible effort and what a community we live in.
Jane, look after yourself. Thank you so much for continuing to call through and keeping us updated on your local community.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So last Thursday, the Longwood fire hit and destroyed so many properties, and one of them was the family-owned award-winning Fowles Winery. They lost their vineyard, they lost their family home, they lost livestock. And on Saturday, as a part of our emergency rolling coverage, I spoke with Matt after he'd just reunited with his wife and his three young daughters. And Matt had to tell his kids the awful news that their home was lost, and he was planning to head back to process the damage and those next steps. Matt, I know this is really hard for you, so We appreciate the time that you've taken to speak with us. First things first, how are you?
Yeah, it's probably hitting me a bit harder today because I guess we finished getting the last of the animals off the place yesterday, and then now it's just a sort of less activity, if you like. So a bit more time, idle time to think about things. But, yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
Yeah. I know when we spoke on Saturday, you know, we spoke about it being day by day and moving from the practical and trying to process it. After you hugged your family goodbye and you went back to the winery, what were you faced with? What did you see?
Well, it's just utter devastation. You know, I'm sitting up on the hill now at the vineyard, and there's not, you know, every part of the whole property is black. So, every little inch of it. So it's just, yeah, it's sort of actually very hard to process.
Who are you there with, Matt?
I've got my brother and my colleague, and then the team on the farm. We had a mob of 1,260 sheep and only 118 got through. So we had to deal with that yesterday. So the team's been doing that heartbreaking work. And
I can't imagine what that would be like, Matt, when you say had to deal with that. I mean, if you think about the reality of what that is, that's intense.
Yeah, it looks like a war zone here. Yeah, I've just got to start. To be honest, my head's sort of jammed at the moment. I don't know. There's so much to process, and I've just got to, now I've got to start thinking about, re-establishing a home for the girls before school, and then, what are the next steps for team and business? And one thing I will say is that the support from the broader community has been absolutely amazing, but then the wine industry in particular, I'm reminded why we love it so much. The number of phone calls, wineries I've never heard of texting me saying, we'll down tools and come and give you a hand.
That's amazing.
Really, it's incredible.
I know it's probably too early to ask this, but I know on Saturday when we spoke, Matt, you know, you were talking about it taking at least a year for some of the vines for the vineyard to come back to refresh in any way. I mean, what are you thinking at the moment as you walk around? Do you see your future still in viticulture, still in winemaking?
Oh, look, it's my love and passion, and my hope is to continue. But I'm literally looking at the vineyard now, and it's, I'm trying to get more information about how the vines will respond. Some people think they'll go through, but looking at it now, you just can't believe they would.
When you say get the house ready for the girls who start school, because you've got three young girls, don't you? I think 15, 8 and 6.
9.
So so you've got high school to primary school.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I mean, what do you do? What do you do? Do you know where you're going to stay?
No, I don't yet. I can't believe it, but I reckon I've had offers of perhaps 10 houses, which is just, it just blows my mind how kind people are. And we can go here and you can come, we go over there and you can come here sort of thing. And then we've just got to, now that we've got that horrible work done yesterday and got the last of the animals off, I think that's the next job, is just to figure out which option's best for us, and lots of conversations with the girls, and we'll figure it out.
I know after I spoke to you, Matt, we spoke to the Red Cross, and they've got this great resource on how to talk to kids about, disaster as well, because no one prepares you for this, do they? No one says when you're trying to learn how to be a parent, by the way, you know, when you've got young kids, you might have to talk to them about losing the family home and dead animals and all these kind of things, and finding those words. So that might be a resource that can help you and can help others as well. But how are your girls?
This is the worst thing that's happened in my life probably. And so, you know, you can imagine it is for them as well. And for them to sort of deal with it so early in their lives is going to be really interesting. I will seek advice because, I'm in uncharted territory, but they're very upset. But I can tell you they were very, very happy to see their dad walk through that door.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Make sure you look after yourself and do seek help, as you said, Matt. And after we spoke the first time, there were lots of people out there, if they hadn't already tried your wine, were desperately wanting to buy a case or two to help in any way. So we'll keep in touch, but look after yourself and we wish you all the best. But we'll stay in touch.
Thanks. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt. Matt Fowles, who's the owner of Fowles Wine, just trying to figure out what those next steps are. Peter's in Alexandra's called through. Peter, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really well. So you run a caravan park, is that right?
Yeah, we do. We've got a permanent caravan park.
How is everyone?
Everyone's safe and well. We the fires came within about 500 metres of us, and we were all safely tucked away at the refuge centre. So we're all good. Everyone's a bit shaken up still.
Absolutely. Were you? How long have you been in the area, Matt? Did you live through Black Saturday as well?
We did Black Saturday in Molesworth, and we did the other one the other day here, and neither were fun.
No, absolutely not. It would have been. I'm sure it would have raised a lot of emotions for you.
Yeah, look, it's been pretty bad, and a lot of people who lived in the park now came from Marysville. So they've basically lived through it again. So yeah, there's a lot of emotions going on here.
How about talking to each other, recognising that, especially if you've got people from Marysville and you've got people from that triangle that were devastated, 17 years ago in a couple of weeks, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah, look, everyone's still in a state of shock. We've got some people who lost housing, and if you go outside the town, it's pretty devastating. It's not great.
So how many people are in the caravan park now, Peter?
I think most of them returned now. So we've got about 70-odd here at the moment.
Are some of them permanents?
They're all permanents.
They're all permanents. Oh, gosh. Okay, God, that makes it different, doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes it a little bit harder.
Wow, you'd be one of the few remaining caravan parks with, 100% permanent residents.
Yeah, we're the only one in the area that offers a 99-year lease, etc. But ours is all about permanent residency. But what I wanted to talk about was the fact that we've had people living in caravans and annexes for 30, 40 years here. And they're quite happy.
Yeah.
It's all about affordability. It's all about what you can afford.
Yeah. And the community that you create.
The community that you create. But the thing about affordable housing or temporary housing, like prefab housing, is it's a cheap solution.
If the people that live with you in your caravan park, Peter, are they there though just simply because they can't afford to live in a home that we would all consider to be, in inverted commas, a normal home, bricks and mortar? They're sort of forced to live there?
Yep. Exactly. If you've only got 50 grand, a caravan annex with a bathroom, that's your best option.
Yeah. Peter, thank you for your thoughts, and I wish you and all of your tenants nothing but safety.
No worries. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Let's go to another Peter. It's a morning for Peters. Peter's up on the Murray. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you?
Really well. What did you want to say?
Good. Well, we have a lifestyle village and a caravan park up here, so we've had a bit to do with transportable homes for like 15 years. But really what I wanted to talk about was I saw a few years ago up in Queensland, they were trying to get rid of, excess workers' accommodation. The typical ATCO hut with four bedrooms in it. It's just a box, four bedrooms. And what they'd done was they'd sort of removed the middle two bedrooms and put a kitchen and a lounge in there. So laundry. So from my point of view, that would just fit on the back of a truck and it would be suitable for a family. So when they were talking about emergency accommodation to take to a fire area or wherever, a flood area, whatever, that to me would be a great solution because there's a few mobs set up to build those things. And, it's just a variation on, a little bit of a variation on what they do.
Yeah, and it's the idea of sort of having that plan in place and being able to do it. Peter, great idea. Thank you. Grant's called us from Harcourt. Oh, gosh, Grant, how are you?
Hi. Look, we're the lucky ones. We have a house and we are okay. It was evacuated at the very last minute. It was a very bad and ferocious fire, and certainly some parts of Harcourt have been really badly affected and impacted. Our hearts go out to those people. An enormous, I cannot tell you how enormous it would be. Thank you to the CFA, the SES and Victoria Police. They are still very active there. They've been amazing. Even though there have been quite a few houses lost, it's amazing. You drive around and you see houses where the fire is literally licking at their front door, but the houses have been saved, and that's because the CFA works so hard.
They've done incredible work, haven't they? I spoke to Jesse, one of the firefighters, on Saturday, and so many of the firefighters across the state, Grant, have saved other people's homes and come home to find that theirs is gone.
I believe that's happened in our area, which is terribly sad. There's still no power, no water, no phone service or reception. I'm in Castlemaine at the moment. Don't tell anyone. I shouldn't be.
Your secret's safe with us, Grant. How long have you lived in Harcourt, mate? Okay. How long have you lived there?
5 years, and live on the edge of Harcourt with beautiful views of Mount Alexander, which unfortunately is still ablaze. I walk up there every weekend, and that's terribly sad, but it has been tinder dry for years. I lived in Maldon before that for a few years, and I had a fire plan in Maldon, but we felt really safe in Harcourt and did not think we needed a fire plan at all. And clearly that's incorrect. So now we have one. It was all very quick and very fast. There's very few people back in the town at the moment. It's a bit like a ghost town, but the few of us that are there, everyone's really supportive, and you chat to people on the street and people have bits of information around extra and additional supports that are available, and you can share that with each other, and the community is really strong. And
that's definitely what we're hearing. Grant, thank you for the update. Look after yourself. It's such a beautiful, beautiful town. It really is. I mean, I've been travelling through it and driving through it and buying beautiful produce from Harcourt for decades now. Tom's called through. He's in Yark. Hi, Tom.
Hello. How are you?
Very well. What did you want to share?
We're very unfortunate to have lost everything up in Yark.
Oh, Tom, I'm so sorry.
Oh, thank you. But we're... just wanted to share how grateful we are to the community. It's been a reminder of the best of this country. We had neighbours ramming through fences to take livestock, save horses, at the risk of their own life and property. And it's just been wonderful to get the support of everyone.
And how is the community at the moment, Tom? Because everyone... it's kind of in shock a bit, and, you know, as Matt Fowles was saying before, who, like you, lost so much, it's trying to process it, and day by day and every day there's a new reality that it kind of hits you.
Yeah, it's a bit too surreal to feel at the moment. My dad actually works for Matt, so
Fair income.
We're all very, very connected up there.
It's a small world, isn't it?
It's a small world. It really is. And I think we're reminded that when we lose everything and all we're left with is our common humanity, we're all in the same boat together.
Tom, thank you for your call. It's incredible that you can speak like that and you can think like that. It's amazing.
Thank you for taking the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. Look after yourself. Gosh, it is a really small world. Coming up in just a moment, we'll look at what happens if you rent, if you're in one of the bushfire-affected areas, if the house that you lived in, if the house that you called home, if you rented, how does that impact you? Maybe that's you.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
So a little earlier this morning, you may have heard Kate Mead, our station reporter. She was out at the Kyneton Relief Centre and she spoke with a woman who didn't want to speak on air herself but was happy for Kate to talk talk about her story and her concerns and her worries about falling through the cracks as a renter. This is Kate speaking earlier this morning.
She's a woman that showed me her car. It is filled with every single one of her belongings that she has left and her little dog. And she doesn't know where she's going to sleep tonight. She said, I'm not a homeowner. It took me a long time to find the property that I was in, and now I'm worried that I'm going to fall through the cracks. So where it is that reminder this morning that, you know, we are looking at those homeowners, those people that have lost those houses, but we've got renters as well, renters that have moved into these areas, perhaps because they couldn't find a property in the city, and so that they've found their way into these communities.
So that's Kate Mead, and we'll touch base with her in just a moment to get the latest on the community that she's with. But Fiona York is the Executive Officer for Housing for the Aged Action Group. And Fiona, you've been on our program before, throwing a spotlight firmly onto renters and how often they fall through the cracks when disasters like bushfires hit. That woman who Kate spoke to is 100% correct, that this is something that will affect renters really differently.
Yeah, that's right. There's more and more older people renting in regional areas across the whole of Victoria, in fact, across the whole of the country. And one of the things that's driving that is the price of housing. There's also people that have been renting in communities for many, many years as well, so sometimes 30, 40 years living in the same community as a renter. And it is different for older renters. Oftentimes, because the housing is so expensive, they have to choose between paying the rent and paying the bills, which means that they can't afford things like contents insurance or car insurance, which obviously has a big impact if they do lose their rental property. And oftentimes, the older renters are living in poor quality housing on the edges of towns, which is more vulnerable to the effects of fire and floods. The clients that we've been speaking to this week often have no air conditioning, no insulation. It's extremely hot and extremely smoky at the moment, as people in the area would know. And it makes it really difficult for older renters to live in these homes. Yeah.
Do they get the same kind of financial assistance once and immediate assistance that homeowners get, do you believe, Fiona?
Yeah, they do get, everybody that's affected is eligible for the disaster relief payments. The issue that we're hearing is accessing those. So a lot of older people that we speak to don't have access to the internet. They have often patchy mobile reception. We have people at the moment with no power, no water, as was mentioned earlier. And they are having to sit on the phone for long periods of time to access the payments. And a lot of them just give up. So also the amounts are quite small, and they're not necessarily going to cover all of the costs for people to be moving to the relief centres. And then, as your person mentioned before, where do they go after that? The rental stock disappears, and where can they move back to?
So for renters that have been impacted, and are worried that they will fall through the cracks, where should they go to? Are there good websites? Are there good organisations like yours, the Aged Action Group? Who should they call and reach out to if they've got questions or concerns?
Well, Consumer Affairs Victoria has a rental fact sheet around what to do in disasters, and that includes what are the obligations of the landlord for cleaning up the properties, and can you get rent relief or rent reduction if you can't return to your properties. We don't want to see a situation where renters are having to continue to pay if they can't live in the home. And we also would hope that the renter themselves doesn't have to negotiate this. So Consumer Affairs Victoria is there to assist with these things. And we would encourage people to reach out to the tenancy advice services in their towns. You can often access them through the neighbourhood house. And if they do have questions around how to access assistance, we can certainly
Help them out. And that's the Aged Action Group. Fiona, thank you, because the woman who Kate spoke to this morning highlighted such an important part of this, and that is not everyone is a homeowner, and that we have many renters in a lot of these towns and communities that have been impacted. Fiona, thank you. Fiona York, the Executive Officer for Housing for the Aged Action Group. That's it for today. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll speak to you soon.